You know what else is having ups and downs?
Wait, I'm not done. We watched House of Cards.
Oh man, that was such a good one.
I'm gonna give you a lead in. Jeez.
He'll set you up. Don't worry. We'll keep going.
All right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 155?
Yeah.
So. Sweet.
Should say our names because Pax wants us to do that.
I'm Matt.
Hi, Matt.
One of your hosts. Who are you guys?
I'm Ash, also one of the hosts.
And I am Scott, also one of the hosts.
Amazing, we did it. Okay, let's
Fantastic.
Go.
Fantastic.
Yep.
We all sound, well, two of us at least. Scott sounds refreshed and lovely, so fresh and so clean.
Oh, thanks.
But Ash and I may sound a little haggard. We have been traveling all weekend, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much.
Me all day today and you all weekend long, so.
Yeah.
But we're going to keep it up. Energy up.
We're going to do our best.
Give
bring
fire.
Up
yeah.
joy.
I'm yelling in a hotel room right now.
Wow. Crazy. So what are you doing in San Francisco right now? What's out your window? What do you see?
The other side of the hotel.
Oh, one of those.
It's a really nice hotel, but it's like a U-shaped hotel, so I'm looking at the other piece. I am attending WWDC, which we're going to talk about a little bit in the news. So
sweet.
My company, which I have since learned I should not mention nor talk about as if I'm from, is sent me here to WWDC for Apple's conference. So I'm hanging
and
out to learn
that
some
works for a butt implant company that he's
yep.
not allowed to talk about.
I learned the sort of hard way, not about this podcast, that I am not allowed to mention that I work for a company. So
all right,
oopsie,
may have gotten chastised slightly. But yeah, so they sent me here, gracious of them. I'm in San Francisco for the first time ever, hanging out. I'm gonna try and meet up with some of our buds, possibly, if I can line that up. I don't know. We'll see what's going on.
Well,
and hanging out.
Let's do the rundown.
Let us preview the show, if you will, for our listeners today. So we will be talking about Watch Dogs that came out this week to a lot of weird internet commentary.
Yeah.
So Matt and Ash played that, and we'll talk a little bit about that. I have actually trolled Matt a little bit using
yes.
the CTOS app that is the companion
awesome.
App for Watch Dogs, so I'll talk about that. I played a game called Teleglitch, which I was invited to take a look at, so I took a look at it, and it's pretty cool. I'm sure most of our listeners may or may not already know about this game, but I will say a few words about it, and Matt is playing Wolf Among Us, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Of course, we'll talk about what we've been up to, what's going on with Ant-Man, what's going on at WWDC and Community, the television show that we love so much. And then I thought we'd wrap up the show with some outlandish predictions and hopes and fears for E3. Does that sound good?
Sounds good.
All right.
Yes. So today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible's got over 150,000 titles to choose from in every genre: thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Audible titles play on iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. Get a free audiobook and help out the podcast in the process by going to www.audibletrial.com/ratedNA, and you'll get a free audiobook. And you should send us some suggestions on Twitter, because I'm going to finish up Dad is Fat soon, and I'm going to need something new. So somebody send me a suggestion. Send it on Twitter, email us, we'll read it on air, and talk about your favorite books to listen to.
I listened to the first couple of chapters of Dad is Fat. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
It's a really good book.
I can listen to Jim Gaffigan kind of just talk about anything. He's got a fun voice. So.
Yeah. Yeah. He sounds like a cartoon character sometimes.
Yeah. So we already kind of dove into my traveling. We can come back to it if we feel like it. But Ash, what have you been up to?
So one of my lifelong buddies ended up getting married this weekend. So I went to my wife and I counted. This was our 17th wedding since we've been dating.
Wow.
So this was the 17th wedding that we went to. I was in this wedding, so it was a whole weekend extravaganza. So I had to drive a little bit to get to the wedding, and it was an awesome wedding, really well put together. The funny part about it, though, that actually ties in with video games and pop culture, which is what this podcast is about. A lot of people from my old guild were there, which was really kind of hilarious. So, so my old World of Warcraft guild that was together for a really long time, we were called The Fold, and we were on a server called Manoroth. And a lot of the guys that started the guild with me were all part of the wedding party. So we had this like long geek out session where we talked about Warcraft and just kind of reminisced for a bit about old Molten Core runs. And then we kind of got like super sappy and we started talking about how badly that game fucking destroyed our lives.
I was going to ask if you feel the itch again now.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. So we sat around and we're like, and then I got a D in this class and like I fucked up this relationship and did this wrong. Like everyone's like, yeah, me too. And like I didn't pay my rent on time. We're like, yeah, that game fucking destroyed us. But that was fun reminiscing. And let's see, did I do anything fun in terms of games and such? No, I was so busy the whole time I didn't get a chance to really do anything out there except for wedding stuff. I did listen to more of Dan Carlin's Hardcore History on the way back. I'm still listening to the nine-hour recipe for Armageddon podcast that he did, so it's really good.
Does your wife stay awake during that, or does she pass out?
I only listen when she goes to sleep.
Okay.
She passed out, and I'm like, all right, I'll listen now. So that's pretty awesome. And when I got back, I watched the latest Game of Thrones, which was so terrible that I almost threw up in my mouth. And
terrible in a good way, or
terrible as in like so violent that I was like, you guys know I was like raised on violence.
Yeah.
Like I'm saying I wasn't in like Uganda like getting killed myself, but I watched a lot of horror films and a lot of really violent movies as a kid, and violence in film doesn't really faze me, but this was just so bad. Something happens and it's just so bad. And I won't say anything. It just made me very uncomfortable. So then after I watched that, I tried out Watch Dogs because I'd been waiting to play it, but I'd been pretty busy this week. So I got maybe 3 hours into Watch Dogs, enough to formulate an opinion and talk about it. So so we'll talk about that. Scott, what about you? What have you been doing?
I finished Shadowrun Returns on Steam, which I really liked. And they have a new campaign that's out, so maybe I'll check that out soon. But it's, I understand that it seems to be pretty faithful to the original game, and I would play it again. It seems like something I would like to play, in the meat space, the actual Shadowrun, because that's what it is, right?
I kept pushing to want to play a Shadowrun game, and I think that the issue is that I think Ash would do it probably, right? I don't think you have any qualms against it. Pen and paper, Shadowrun. The issue was that the ladies in our gaming group were like, meh, if it's not sword and fantasy, I don't want to do it.
But it totally can be. I was impressed by how so many different styles of combat and ways to approach situations are blended together into one game. I didn't think it was going to work, but it kind of works somehow.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a different world than they're used to, so it would take some getting it up and running kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. And then I've been checking out some of the previous Xbox Games with Gold games. So I played a game called Deadlight, which I actually thought was the other game, I Am Alive. So when I played I Am Alive, I thought I was playing Deadlight. But I liked I Am Alive, and then I finally played Deadlight, and I liked that too. Deadlight is a sort of a side-scrolling... Imagine if The Last of Us were like a side-scrolling kind of game, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
It's not as scary and you're not trying to avoid everything, but it kind of has that same feel, if that kind of sums it up correctly. And then I started to realize I was going through my queue on my Xbox 360, which I don't really use that much anymore, and I was reviewing the games that I had yet to play, which included some of the games from Xbox Game with Gold. And the titles of these games are literally all themed in the same space, right? I've got The Walking Dead, Deadlight, Dead Island, and there was something else that had the word dead in it, but I think that if you want to make a zombie game, that's how you get your point across. You put the word dead in your title. Like, literally, I have 5 games in my queue that all have the word dead and deal with zombies, so I'm just going to put that out there. Anyways, Deadlight is actually a really great game, and if you downloaded it with the Games with Gold promotion, It's it'll probably take, it's like not very long. It'll probably take you like 5 or 6 hours to get through, but it's awesome. And then I moved on to Dust, an Elysian Tale, which actually I remember seeing, and our buddy Nate from Reset Transmission really liked that game, so I gave that a shot, and it's really good. It's sort of that Metroidvania style game, but it's all hand drawn, and the combat is like melee combat, so it's not shooting weapons and stuff like that. But it's cool. It's really good, and it's not as annoying as those Metroidvania games tend to be. It's not so in your face with like, oh, now travel all the way to this side of the map, and here's your bomb. Now walk all the way back to the other side and blow up the wall. It's not that bad. They make it easier to get around, and it has an RPG element and sort of a mild crafting system. So it's really good. The only thing that's weird is the voice acting, because it comes across like a kid's game, and I think it's kind of the difficulty of the game, I think, is geared towards a more adult audience. So that's that. And then a game that I saw at PAX, which I was interested in, Murdered Soul Suspect, which is a Square Enix game. It's coming out tomorrow, actually. We're Tuesday. If you're listening to this on Wednesday, we'll already be out. I was trying to find a deal on the game, and just by some kind of random chance or dumb luck, I came across this website called G2A, which I think is a European website where people can post deals and sell Steam keys and do weird stuff like that, and companies can put products there. I don't really understand how it all works, but they ran this promotion over the weekend. It was like a PayPal promotion, so I guess you had to pay with PayPal to get it.
Yeah.
But I picked up this game for like €16, which is like $22.
You also now have a mail order bride on the way.
I know, right? Now I'm afraid to see. First of all, I haven't gotten my Steam key yet, so
I kind of wanted to compare it to like the South Park bank. And you put in $100 and it's gone.
Yeah. So I did some minor internet sleuthing, and everybody seems to think that it's a legit website. But I think what's going to happen is that I'm not going to get the game on Tuesday. I think I'm going to get the game on the international release date, which is actually Friday. But if that all works out, I'll be playing this brand new game on Steam for $22, and I love getting deals.
You're gonna walk into your den, and there'll just be a strange woman standing there, and she'll be, Scott, hello. Scott, why you not love me no more, Scott?
I am Murder Soul Suspect. Do you not love me?
My name is Murder Soul Suspect, Scott.
Oh, that's what I ordered. My wife is gonna be so disappointed.
Yeah. Oh boy.
Anyways, so Matt, you're traveling. Anything else to add? What's going on?
I did stuff before I traveled. I just remembered. It's been a long day, guys. I apologize.
Yeah. Flight to San Francisco.
Flight is brutal. So I used Roll20 for the first time ever, which is an online sort of tabletop gaming site. I hesitate to say D&D because it really has nothing to do with D&D specific.
They're probably not contractually allowed to
say D&D. They are not at all related to D&D. But we played D&D on it. We played D&D Next, which is like the 5th edition coming for D&D, and I started a campaign with a couple of friends. I'm actually not running it, which is fun. I get to just show up and play. It worked really well. I was pretty surprised, and it makes me encouraged to maybe try to do like a monthly game or something with you guys, since we are moderately remote now.
For sure.
The screenshot kind of looks like a Google Plus Hangout with a D&D like map.
Yes. So you can do it when they have like a Flash app that you can do all in their system. I've heard the video is not super stable that way. Mm-hmm. Or you can do the Google Hangout version, which is they built, like, you can build add-ons to Google Hangouts, and they basically built their app into Google Hangout, which is pretty cool. That's how we did it. We got on a Google Hangout, we all hung out and played, and no pun intended, and but it was a really good time. We played for about, man, I think about 2.5 hours. I got to land the killing blow on the boss guy that we were fighting, which was cool.
Nice.
I'm playing a dwarf paladin.
Nice.
Who was, what did I make him? Oh, he was an apprentice, like smith, blacksmith, and finished his apprenticeship and just decided to like adventure out into the world to find a place to live and work, because the the blacksmith in town was still there. It was too small of a town, so I couldn't stay, kind of thing. And so now I built my own armor and my own warhammer, and I just walk around using it to be like, hey, I can do this if anybody wants one of these things, and then like try to get some work. But it was pretty fun. He started. We're playing in Forgotten Realms, I think.
Okay.
So it was cool. Awesome. Overall, but the system worked pretty well. You know, if you've got a bunch of remote friends, I would say maybe give it a shot. It's we had some like glitches, some ups and downs here and there, but for the most part, like no problems.
Yeah. You know what else is having ups and downs?
Wait, I'm not done. House
oh
of Cards.
Man, that was such a good one.
I'm gonna give you a lead in. Oh, man.
He'll set you up. Don't worry. We'll keep going.
I was like, wait, there's a good one. Okay.
We started season two of House of Cards.
You know what else is season two?
Wow.
Have you guys watched House of Cards?
No.
I watched season one.
All I can say, yes. And literally all I can say, is that they do not screw around with the first episode of House of Cards season two.
I did see that.
Did you see the spoiler thing?
I saw the season two opener, yeah.
Melissa and I both... like out loud we're like, what the fuck, like jumped off the couch. It is the most like sudden. It was amazing. So
yeah,
we're hooked. We're already about four episodes in. I'm still absolutely hooked to that show. I love the kind of shitty intrigue of how crappy our government works, and it's amazing. So but yeah, we were watching House of Cards, and it was just like that just blew us away. That whole screw up was, or that whole scene was,
no, it's unbelievable. Yeah, I did the same thing. I was like, no.
You know what else is unbelievable?
What's that?
News.
Edgar Wright left Ant-Man.
And everybody else did too.
Yeah.
I think you text us, you're like, what's going on with him?
Yeah. Talk about it, Ash.
Oh, okay, so everyone heard, we talked about it last week, that Edgar Wright left Ant-Man, and no one really knows why yet. I don't think we'll ever really know the full story, but I think it was just kind of a difference in mentality and kind of what they were trying to bring to the table. And then Adam McKay, who directed a bunch of comedies like Talladega Nights and what were some of the other big ones Adam McKay did?
He did Step Brothers, Talladega Nights, Anchorman.
Yeah, Anchorman 2. So he was attached very briefly. I want to say it was like less than 24 hours, because I just like – I heard that news and I kind of felt like I was going to barf. And then I was like, oh. And as soon as the barf feeling went away, it was like, oh, no, he's not doing it. I'm like, oh, now I don't have to barf. I don't – because I'm going to fucking lay on the train tracks here, but I don't like any of those movies. I mean, Step Brothers and Talladega Nights, and just like that whole like the Will Ferrell brand of comedy just doesn't ever really resonate with me. And I know I sound like an old grandpa, but like sometimes it's chuckle worthy, but mm-hmm. I'm not one of those guys that's like spitting soda out of my nose at the movie theater, you know what I mean?
Right.
So correct. And also Ant-Man seems like a property that's going to have a lot of action, and I haven't really seen him do great action. Like I think about those Anchorman fight scenes for those brief like rumbles that he does, and they're funny, but they're not good action scenes. Like Edgar Wright does fucking great action scenes.
Yeah.
He's
yeah,
a great
sure.
action director. So you kind of need someone that's going to be able to do funny and action packed at the same time. So
I briefly heard, and it wasn't a rumor, but I've heard rumblings on the bloggeratis, if you will,
mm-hmm.
that the directing duo that did 21 Jump Street and I think the Lego movie and the new 22 Jump Street or whatever have been tossed around as a good pairing to follow in Edgar Wright's footsteps.
Hmm.
So, yeah. Because they do comedy action kind of, and they've proven themselves moderately with the two Jump Street movies and then mm-hmm. the Lego movie as well.
Yeah, no, I can see. I mean, I think the action in Jump Street was actually pretty good. The other one that I saw was the guy that directed Zombieland,
yeah,
Ruben Fleischer. He, I think, is like one of the contenders. The only problem is he's only done, I think, like two full length features, and the second one didn't do as well as Zombieland. But Zombieland, I think, looked great, and the action was, at least, you know,
yeah.
adequate. It was yeah. it was fun. His slow motion scenes were fucking gorgeous. And I know that's just like, you know, but who knows?
Yeah, Latina Review was talking about how it's like this is a difficult situation because basically they've already sunk enough money that they can't, they're not going to probably scrap it, mm-hmm. but that they need to figure out what kind of director can step in with significant work kind of already done too.
Yeah.
And who, like, basically also at the same time, they're going to need to find somebody cheap enough to just kind of come in and do it, but not so cheap that it's done like subpar of what was already being set up to be done. So it's a precarious situation for sure. But
yeah.
Have you guys, I still think there's enough time.
Have you put any thought in who you would like to, if you could just pick one? Have you thought about that at all?
Man,
the only one that I thought of just the other day, and I know this is stupid, but I could see Sam Raimi doing an awesome job with Ant-Man. And I know he's already done all the Spider-Man movies, and a lot of people were like Spider-Man 3 was shit, but he's done so many other incredible movies, and I really think that his visual style and the kind of the slapsticky stuff that he does could be really good. But
yeah, it's hard to know though, right? Because Edgar Wright, the guy they had attached to it, is so identifiable through his work, mm-hmm. that it's like it's weird to try to think of who you would fit into that mold, because now you're literally trying to find somebody to be Edgar Wright, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. I still find it tough to figure out who I'd have. I feel like it's gonna have to be somebody young and who has not done much, like who did like Chronicle or something like that. Like,
ooh, I don't know. Yeah, that's a good question.
You know what I mean? Like something that maybe is a younger director who has a couple of like decent movies under his belt, but maybe not. Oh, he's doing Fantastic Four. Never mind.
Oh, the Chronicle guy is.
Scratch that one.
Apparently, you know, Hollywood, I mean, thinks the same way you do, though.
Yeah, but you know what I mean. Something along those lines. Yeah. Like a younger guy who's kind of maybe not super identifiable yet that can step in and kind of do it.
It's funny that it's taking them so long to actually pick somebody, though, because you figure with, you know, and this is a potential, you know, billion-dollar franchise that they're kind of – it's just so risky. You know, I guess that's why it's taking them so long, because it could go either way. It could end up being great or it could end up being total shit. So
yeah, exactly.
So we'll see.
Who knows? Hopefully it gets patched up soon. It's bad that these directors keep being attached and then immediately saying no, or that they're not even getting through negotiations. That seems like a bad sign.
It's strange, right? Super strange.
Yeah. So today, as we talked about a little bit earlier, I'm at WWDC. And if you are super into tech keynotes,
yeah,
then you may have paid attention today or watched it live. I think they were streaming it over Apple's site.
Yeah, let's talk about widgets and shit and coding.
Yeah, so it was a pretty boring keynote, to be honest. They didn't really go over a whole lot of new and exciting. They announced iOS 8. The jokes that everybody's making is that they announced iOS 8 now with features that Android had two versions ago.
Ooh.
They did a couple of jabs at Android too throughout this entire presentation.
I wish that like that frickin' pissing contest would just end. I really don't care anymore. I don't know why anybody cares. It's like a phone in your pocket. They all do almost the exact same thing. They just slightly do it different ways. Like, my firm belief is that if you already use a lot of Microsoft products, get a Windows phone. If you already use a lot of Google's products, get a Google phone. If you already use a lot of Apple products, get an iPhone. Like, that's like, it doesn't make sense to try to use something that doesn't fit into your preconceived world. But
create synergy within your technology life is what you're
saying. Yes. But they announced iOS 8. It has some new things, like Scott made the joke, widgets. You know, you can now use widgets inside of their different panels, right, or something. They've got widgets for – or was that OS 10, the new OS 10?
It's kind of both. I mean, they're adding widgets.
They're unifying the two systems, like, quite a bit.
Yeah. But I think you can add widgets to your notification center within
– That's what it is.
iOS 8, yeah.
Yes. And then a lot of it, though, to be dead honest, was pretty developer heavy, which is something we talked a little bit about before the show began. They announced a new coding language called Swift, which, you know, if you're not super into how to develop apps, that's probably not going to be super exciting, but it is pretty interesting what it is. So I'm not going to get into it because everybody's eyes will glaze over and we'll all fall asleep right now. But it's, you know, it's a new coding language. It's exciting for Apple, and it's, I think, exciting for Apple devs. It brings in a lot of new features that they've been asking for years. They announced new, like, ways to integrate your app with different systems inside of the phone, which is, you know, good. I think it's good stuff for developers, but it's stuff that you'll probably just kind of notice getting integrated as you go, but nothing so huge that you're going to be like, this is the most amazing thing ever created.
Mm-hmm.
they announced new iCloud integration, right? Mm-hmm. So that iCloud on your desktop will now act a lot more like Dropbox, and then you can, you know, it'll sync up with your phone and everything. You can kind of start using it as a Dropbox if you want. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Google's got Drive. Apple's had iCloud, but not with like as great a support as they're seemingly throwing behind it now. Mm-hmm. They announced home networking stuff, which means they want to integrate, you know, your thermostat with your refrigerator, with your phone, with your door.
something like that. Home automation.
Yeah, they want to automate all your home stuff, which is, again, interesting, but I kind of don't believe in the one thing to rule it all in that way. Like, yeah. I like a bunch of different people making a bunch of different products that I can control in certain ways in my house. I don't know that I want Apple to control or Apple apps to control every facet of everything I'm doing. Work really great if you're on the iPhone, who knows. But
what can happen is that, you know, if you integrate your Nike Fuel Band with the Health Kit, right, then Apple
knows,
Apple will know that you're cold, and then Siri will be like, hey, I see that you're cold right now. Let me turn up the heat for you in the house, and then,
yeah,
you know.
Well, when Siri can find more than, like, 10 things, I'll trust Siri. Well, no, I mean, I'm just serious. It's the same with Google, though. Like, Google Now is pretty amazing and does a lot of stuff that, like, is kind of mind-blowing when you're using it. But if you want to use Google to find stuff, you know, the voice automated finding things, just like Siri, neither one of them are like stellar. Like, they both just kind of default to the internet 99% of the time. So, like, yeah, giving Apple more information is going to, I mean, they're getting into Google's game, right? Give Apple more information so that they can do more stuff that looks amazing. And Google's like, that's what they've been doing. Mm-hmm. So I think it's all great. I think Apple has a much bigger leg up on the hardware side of things, although Google does own Nest now, mm-hmm. but, you know, whatever. So, you know, some of that integration stuff could be pretty awesome. The HealthKit thing was, like, honestly super boring to me. I didn't even understand why that was important. But
it's funny because the whole idea about being able to do, like, telemetry with your health and fitness is kind of interesting from a very, like, you have to be internally motivated to be excited about that, because otherwise it really doesn't do anything. It's just it's just telemetry, and it just goes, hey, yesterday this was your heart rate, and yesterday this is how many steps you took. But, like, you need to make yourself take the steps. You know what I mean? It doesn't, like, unlock anything or give you money. Like, it's just data about your life. And if you already live in a world where you feel like there's too much data, like, do you really need to know that you slept 6 hours last night, 7 the night before? Like, you could probably reason that out on your own, like, if you need to, you know? So it's kind of a weird thing, that whole, like, fitness telemetry industry, but you really have to kind of, like, be motivated yourself to chase that out, because there's not really anything that it really brings to the table, I feel like, to get people super excited about it, unless you're, like, meeting them halfway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's two things that interested me most about this keynote, and it has nothing to do with what was said in it. It was what was said before it by Apple, mm-hmm. which was that they were going to introduce a whole bunch of stuff this year, and that this is going to be one of the biggest keynotes since, you know, Steve Jobs has passed, essentially.
Yeah.
Was kind of what's hinted at this entire time, and then it hit, and it really was just like, you know, here's some software upgrades, and here's some stuff for developers. All right, everybody, thanks. And it was like, that felt really, I really thought there was going to be a wait one more thing kind of moment at the end of it. I thought they were going to maybe announce some piece of hardware or something that just seemed more exciting. And instead it was just kind of like, you know, here's your free OS. I will say the new OS update that's coming out for both the phone and the computer will be free upgrades. The computer one's coming in like October, and the phone one is the same time, I think, maybe.
I
believe so.
Remember,
you don't have to take our word for it. You can Google iOS 8 and it'll.
I do have something intelligent to say about this, the sort of the overall approach that I perceived in this conference that they put on. And it seems like what they are trying to do, you know, they talk up like, oh, you know, all you developers, and we've got like 500 million apps in the App Store, and it's awesome. Yeah. But I feel like everything that they introduced today was designed to keep you out of the apps. And just like in the operating system.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, oh, instead of having to open Sports Center, like, you can just pull down the notification drawer and there's Sports Center right there because you set it up as a widget. And like, oh, you don't have to go into Pinterest because now from Safari, we have this extension and you can just pin stuff, and then you don't ever have to go into Pinterest either. And then right. we're going to take all of your health data from Nike, and we'll just put that like in our own app. So you can just look at that. You don't have to go into the Nike app anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. So I feel like they're trying to keep – it almost seems like they're trying to keep people out of other apps while simultaneously trying to encourage people to develop apps. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where some of the cries of like they're pulling off a Google kind of come, right? Because basically that's kind of what Google, that's what, you know, the idea of widgets has been in Android for a very long time, and they usually suck mm-hmm. was the problem with them, because they would drag your phone battery down and they'd just kind of be terrible, and they've gotten much better lately, but still it's like, I get it. They're trying to get things out of your way to make it easier to use the stuff you want to use. But in the process, yes, what they're doing is removing you going into an app to use it.
Like, don't and you think is, like eBay very... wants you in their eBay app, and SportsCenter wants you to browse oh, yeah. in the SportsCenter app and see the ads and all that stuff?
Of course. And that's yeah. a very anti way that Apple usually does it. Apple's whole thing has always been that, you know, I made jokes about it, that it's the freaking value menu of phones. Cause you just mm-hmm. like, you know, dumb icon press button thing happens. Like yeah. that's like all Apple wanted to do, just like make it super easy and out of your way mm-hmm. to get into the thing you want to use. And now they're kind of saying like, well, don't get into the thing you want to use. Just use it from the phone, which is, you know, it's a different ethos. We'll see what happens. But I have a feeling that this whole widgets thing is going to blow up Apple like a little bit. I think people just either aren't going to use it as much. I mean, who knows? I'm a terrible prognosticator.
As as sort of somebody in the Microsoft ecosystem, like including Xbox and Windows, would it be appropriate for me to be like, oh, there goes Apple backpedaling again on putting widgets on their operating systems? They said they wouldn't do it, and now they're doing it. So everybody
they're not backpedaling,
loses.
Man. They're innovating on the idea okay. of widgets.
You so know, when they listen to listener feedback, when you yeah. know when developer feedback, they're innovating, right?
Yeah,
so when Microsoft changes something in response to user feedback, that's backpedaling, right?
That's backpedaling.
Okay,
yeah,
I just want to make sure I understood the difference between the two.
Look, there's two evil empires. One of them is just dumb, man.
Yeah.
It's not as cool as the rest.
Would you say, Ash, it's not the Cold War?
It's just I don't even remember something like that. Yeah. You don't have to pick a side.
Yeah, you don't have to pick a side.
So, I mean, honestly, I think it's an interesting conference for developers this year. I think that they announced a lot of stuff that's going to make iPhones better in a lot of ways, and especially OS 10 better. I watched a little bit of a design panel today, and they were talking about how to integrate with accessibility stuff, you know, like if you're blind or deaf, like how to better make your apps and your widgets on the desktop even work for people who need it accessibility wise. And it was really interesting, their take on how they're doing things. And I think Apple thinks really hard about this stuff. So when they do developer updates, it's usually better for everyone. It's just not as flashy. And like, that's what gets me about them, is that I feel like they can't have a conference and just be like, hey, we're going to do a lot of awesome stuff in the background, and it's going to make everything really cool. Because Google used to do these in some of their older conferences. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to do a lot of stuff in the background. It's going to make everything that you're doing better. We promise. But we've got nothing cool to show you right now. So, you know, here's a new OS update that's not going to be huge and different. So they always just try to sell it so hard that it turns me off immediately. But
is iOS becoming too complicated? Because I feel like it was sold to people as like, hey, if you are afraid of computers, you can learn this pretty quickly, because just like you said, you push the button and it goes to the app and you do things.
Yeah.
And now you can slide up, you can slide down, you can slide to the side, you can slide like all the way to the side to do something different. You know, you can send an email to the bottom and look at a different email. And, you know, there's a bunch of crap now that you can do, and it's useful. But is it becoming too complicated for somebody?
I don't think so. Like if my parents ask what phone they should get, I probably would still say iPhone right now.
Sure.
Also because I think they wouldn't. The thing with Android is that Android becomes amazing when you utilize Google, and I don't think they would in any significant way that would make the phone cool. Mm. You know, and Apple it still does work very well without very little problem, you know, for a decent amount of time as far as smartphones go. So I think so. I think it's still simple enough. It's still, you know, not. It's not a hacker phone by any means. It is what it is, and it does it very well. But I do think that adding widgets, especially this late in the game, like I don't even understand why, honestly, because I feel like I just don't know anybody's going to use it on the phone. I feel like people who use iPhones are so programmed to do things certain ways. I don't think they're going to be customizing stuff on top of it. I don't know. So
yeah, I barely look at that notification drawer as it is. I barely pull that thing down.
Yeah, I don't either. It's a useless notification.
How about Metal? Do we want to say anything about Metal since we talk about games on this podcast?
So I don't know too much about the Metal thing. I saw their like, see, I saw the developer update stuff that they're doing. But what was Metal?
Metal is supposed to be this new technology, I guess, that allows for more sophisticated. They basically showed something. The head of Epic Games came out and he showed something running on Unreal Engine 4, like on an iPad.
Okay.
And he showed off this app called Zen Garden, and he's like, "Look at how we rendle all the petals on the tree, and then all the koi fish have individual AI." And
yeah, they showed that, and then they showed a couple of game developer tools right after that, right? That allowed you to program kind of more fluidly and get 3D out of stuff pretty easily.
That's when they introduced Swift as well, and they showed Swift how you could program a game like, I guess, swiftly, if you will.
It's like I said, though, like, is that exciting to you, really? I mean, to me, that feels like such a developer update that is just going to be, like, cool for developers and mean nothing to you until a really awesome game comes out on the iPad.
Like, being able to render water realistically is icing on the cake, but, you know, flashy visuals does not a quality gameplay.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the core of gaming is gameplay and concepts like narrative and, you know, usability, stuff like that is what makes games engaging and fun. And so being able to render petals on a tree that's like the icing on the cake. That's like the polish, right. You know, which is great. And of course, like, I welcome stuff like that. But, you know, when you know, they said that they're going to make Zen Garden available for free, and it's like, okay, cool. So I'll just go that's beautiful. It's very beautiful. But
didn't they release like a koi pond once too? Wasn't that one of their early things was koi pond?
I don't know.
I think we could go on about this for a really long time if we really wanted to. But at the end of the day, I think it was a very not flash. They tried to sell it as like big, look at us. But, you know, again, it was not super flashy. It was really developer heavy. I think that there were benefits that will come on the phone and on the OS that'll be really awesome, but that you're not really going to see a whole lot in the front end. I think the idea of widgets is weird, but, you know, whatever. We'll see what Apple does with it. Might work really well. Who knows?
Cool. All right.
So the last little bit of news, we can do this pretty quickly because there's not really a whole lot out about it yet, is there are now rumors that Sony may try to work with Hulu to save a season number 7 or 6, right? For Community. So we may see season 6 for Community, and it may be on Hulu. We might be able to binge watch it all in one time if we want to.
That would be amazing.
That would be insane.
I wonder how close they are to syndication, because you need 100. Seven. They're 7 episodes away.
No. 7 seasons, I think, is what they had to hit.
Okay. Shit. Okay. Well, still, I mean, that's really exciting for them. Hopefully it goes through. I was reading the reason why they're even considering allowing Community to have an extra season on Hulu is because it gets a lot of traffic. It's like one of their most highly watched shows. So,
well, I mean, doesn't that make sense though? Let's talk about, like, I mean, thinking about Community, it's aimed at a younger generation. It's the younger generation for sure watches a lot more TV in a lot more ways than at the time that it's on air on the TV. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So of course it makes sense that they get more streams on Hulu. I think that's just like, that's logical probably at the end of the day. I read an article, Deadline made the point that Sony's pretty famous for actually saving shows even after networks drop them.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Damages went to DirecTV to finish out its run. They moved. I think they were talking about a couple of the shows that I guess Sony owns that they do a very good job of brokering them to another party. So maybe we'll see this happen. Originally, I think there was pushback from Dan Harmon that he didn't want to do it.
Mm.
And apparently now he's opening up to the
idea.
Does
he not understand how his viewership consumes his show? Because it's probably not when it airs live on NBC. I don't even know what time the show is on TV.
Yeah.
I think Dan Harmon, from the little bit that I have seen of him, like, I, you know, listening to his podcast and he's a very interesting guy, very open too. I think he's a very emotional creature. And I think when something like Community gets canceled, I think his initial gut reaction is, you know, fuck it. I just don't even want to do
it. Take my ball and going home.
Yeah. And, like, I think, you know, as time goes on and Sony's like, hey, well, we could make this work, though. You know, like, I think he may open up to the idea. He's definitely done crazy things. The podcast that he started was when he got fired before. Mm-hmm. He started the podcast, then took it on the road, and then put a documentary out about it. So he's obviously not against trying new things. You know, he went to Kickstarter to fund a movie with Starburns from Community.
Oh, wow.
I forget his real name. I just totally blanked his real name. But
it's like Stephanopoulos or something.
Yeah, yeah. It begins with a D. So I think it's interesting. Hopefully it happens, right?
Yeah, no, that'd be awesome.
That would be incredible.
I would love to see it.
I mean,
all right, well, what?
I was just going to say, I was trying to think about even what the last season could be in terms of storylines that need to be wrapped up, whatever, but it doesn't matter. They'll come up with something. It'll be fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we talked about this game at length many times on many different podcasts, but Watch Dogs has finally come out.
It has.
And we have it in our grubby – well, two of us have it in our grubby little hands. I have played – I'm 10% complete on the game, played for about 12 hours, if that gives you any idea of how long this game could go.
Wow.
Ash.
I've only gone about three probably at this point, so enough to get the mechanics down and some of the, you know, understanding the systems, but holy shit, is there a lot to do in this game. Like, yes. The skill tree looks like a fucking explosion. I'm just like, what is this? I don't even understand. Wow. This is like, it's not even a skill tree, it's like a skill bush.
Well,
skill bush.
Yeah.
That is one of the interesting things about this game is how they present information to you, because they do present a lot of information to you in the game, whether it's through your skill tree or through your phone or through your progress bar. Or it's not even a progress bar, honestly. It's a like same thing. It's like a progress, you know, sunfire. I don't know. Like all of the information they present to you is all done in a super graphical way and in a very interesting way at the end of the day. But the skill tree is like a bubble that bubbles out to more. It's like a mind map, if you've ever seen one of those, and it literally it just keeps like spreading out. Have you gotten to the part where the skill tree expands yet, Ash?
To that point, I'm like, holy shit, I'm like barely scratching the surface of what there is to do here. So
it's definitely one of those games where you're like 2 or 3 hours in and you're like, oh, I get this, you know, like I can probably charge through the storyline and no big deal, and then like that happens and you're like, oh, there's a lot more skill tree here. and then you'll finish a mission and it'll be like mission number 7, act 1 done. And you're like, I'm still in act 1.
Like, it is a beast. Going. Yeah, it's definitely an Ubisoft title. So let's talk a little bit just about, I guess, about the, before we get into the mechanics and stuff, let's talk a little bit about the plot without revealing all too much, like who the main protagonist is, what he's up to, you know, what's really the driving force behind the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. The plot driver is not a spoiler. It happens in like the first 2 minutes of the game starting, essentially. But you are Aiden Pierce. You're a sort of vigilante hacker, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning of the game, you're out kind of hacking this hotel for information. You're trying to steal like backdoor their bank account, it seems like. And you've got a partner that you're working with who kind of sits remote. You know, the guy in the van, quote-unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're doing it, something goes wrong. You get kind of side-hacked by somebody else, and then you run out. And the next thing that happens is they kind of run through some cutscenes, and basically your niece gets killed while you're driving a car with her in it. Somebody shoots out your tires, and you, a year later, this is like fast forwards 11 months, and mm-hmm. you are now kind of out to get vengeance for your niece's death. You're trying to find out who did it. You don't know anything about who did it. You've got very little lead on any of this, and you are out there trying to gather information, figure out what happened, and get to the people that got you. But the opening scene of that is it starts off in a baseball stadium, and it's kind of amazing. It's like it's a kick in the pants to like just kick a story off.
It was good. I definitely like that opening scene.
Yeah, you're working with two partners. One is called Bad Boy 17, who's like along the lines of an anonymous hacker, essentially. I forget, what are they? They have a name in this one. DedSec?
DedSec, yes. Thank you. Totally forgot.
And then you're also working with, is it Joey? Is that his name?
I don't know if I've met Joey yet. Maybe.
You've met him. No, the fixer. The guy.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah.
You're working with this like fixer, too, who, you know, gets contracts and stuff, but you're basically paying him to help you track these people down. And you're no longer working with the guy that you meet at the very beginning, who's kind of the man in the van with you. You seem to have split ways with him. And the story kind of just expands from there. And it's set in Chicago, I should say, also. And the kind of impetus for this world is that there's a Mayor Bloom, which, by the way, if they just said it in New York and been like, Bloom, Bloomturg. This is basically Mayor Bloomberg, it seems like. But, you know, Mayor Bloom of Chicago has set up this CTOS system, which is a citywide technology system that runs everything in the city, from traffic lights to, doors and gates and phone systems and computer networks. Mm-hmm. Like, it literally runs everything in the city. So
that seems like a great idea.
Right. You tap into it as a hacker, you basically get access to, like, more points. And that's one of the processes of opening up different parts of the sandbox that you're in is you go and you hit a point, you have to like take it over sort of, and then once you take it over, it opens up that map. Some of the mechanics in the game, is there more story you were thinking?
No, that's good. I mean, it's like a basic overview for people, because I honestly, you know, we had first seen this game in 2012 at E3, and it was the most highly buzzed about game, and everyone was freaking out about Watch Dogs and how beautiful it was. And now we have it, and while it's getting reviewed well, I wouldn't say the buzz is entirely positive about it. And I've been hearing a lot of the reasons why are from a narrative standpoint. So I was curious, like, you know, what your perspective was just on, you know, the overall narrative of the story and kind of what was motivating the main yeah. guy to do his thing. So,
yeah, my kind of response to it is that I think the story is very good. I think it's very is probably a strong word. I think the story is good. I think the voice acting is great in it, actually. I think a lot of the voice direction and acting I liked. I don't know if everybody does, but I laugh sometimes when you're talking to the fixer. I thought some of the parts with the hacker are interesting the further you get along.
Mm-hmm.
I like the main guy who plays Aiden Pierce. He can get a little, you know, Batman-y gruff on occasion, can get maybe a little annoying, but to me, it's not bothering me that much. I like it. His sister's actually a really good actress in this too, as well.
Okay, I just met her in the story, so
yeah, I like her part. But yeah, the story's good. I think it's easy to get these games are hard because it's super easy to get lost while playing. Like,
that's exactly what I did. I did like the first couple of missions, and then I honestly just like drove around doing side missions and like stealing cars and all sorts of different stuff. Let's jump into, we'll be able to do like the full, we'll do like a spoiler full episode on this in a little bit, but what about the mechanics of the game itself? Because it does some really unique stuff that I haven't actually ever done in an open world game, which I thought was really cool. But what are some of the highlights for you?
Yeah, so it does, and I'll talk about the unique stuff as well with you, but I think there's also, I don't want to like blow it up too much, because there's a lot of samey as a lot of other games that are out that sound very familiar, probably for this company even.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's a lot of, like I said, unlocking the parts of the map. It's like nothing that you do in this game short of some of the randomized walking around and hacking, I think is new. It's just done in a sort of unique way. Mm-hmm. So like unlocking the map, you literally go to a waypoint, you break into a building, and then you like tap into the system and it unlocks that chunk of the map. Like, and unlocks all the points on the map and your ability to hack things like the traffic lights and the bridges and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I want to say it's the equivalent of going to an eagle dive in any one of the Assassin's Creed's. Mm-hmm. So like you get up to the top, Eagle Lookout rather. You get to the top, you look out, and then you unlock that chunk of the map. It's literally the exact same thing in Watch Dogs. It's just done in a sort of slightly different way. you know, some of the other mechanics, the driving felt to me very GTA-ish.
It does. It's very GTA. I would say the cars handle not quite as well as the GTA cars. Like, so, and everything explodes. Like, you hit a tree and it just bursts into a million pieces. And I'm like, something's the physics are a little fucking weird. And so, also, let me just say one thing real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
You can't just kill civilians because you have a meter that determines, like, if you're a hero or a villain. But then they say, you know, outrun these cops. And you're like, okay, I'm outrunning the cops. Mm-hmm. And if you mow down civilians, it takes your meter down. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, how can I be mindful of, like, this, like, 8,000 people in a park? And I'm running from the cops. I'm like, how am I going to do this? So I think it's going to teach me to be a better driver in the game. Because I do want to play it as, you know, a good character. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I don't know if it gets annoying or not.
Yeah, it does. It does. Okay. But here's the thing with it. There are good cars and there are shitty cars. And the shitty cars handle like shit. And they, like, you can barely drive them. You're like trying to corner and you can't. Like, you're just running crap over left and right. And then you get in a good car and you're like, oh, this is a decent car. Even then, the handling is still a little wonky. It's definitely not as fine tuned as a GTA. Mm-hmm. But I enjoy it for the most part. What you'll do, the trick, I'll give everybody the trick right now, is when you're driving, set waypoints for everything. Like, literally, anything you want to do, just set a waypoint. Immediately hit the map button, set a waypoint, because the map's huge. The map is gigantic, so, like, the moment you're trying to find things, you'll get lost really easy. Set a waypoint, and then as you're following the waypoint, when you come up on a corner, jam on the handbrake and the regular brake. And your car will kind of spin the back tires out, and then you can just let go and hit the gas again, and then you'll take off like an arrow down that thing. And then if you're just trying to escape and there's not gunfire, get on a motorcycle. They handle really well and they're crazy fast.
That's what I've been using, yeah.
But if you're in a gunfight, you'll die immediately in a gunfight.
Cool.
Like immediately. There is the so you unlock the concept of ordering cars from your fixer. So if you're going into a mission and you kind of know what the mission's going to be, or you think you might, you can order a car ahead of time and have it kind of like set up somewhere near where you're going to be. And then you can just jump in that one and take it. Which is nice, cause you can get, there's different levels of car. There's like fast cars, crappy cars, heavy cars.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, I got into one where you have to, basically you're just escaping the police and they're all over the place and they're just like unloading their guns on you. And I hijacked a garbage truck.
Nice.
And just started like plowing everything because nothing could take down the garbage truck. Like, it's just huge and you can't get killed in it. And I'm just like running over cops and like smashing through walls and stuff. And it does end up being slightly fun driving, but it's definitely not, thankfully, not the main mechanic of the game.
Let me ask you guys a question.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't get this game because I'm a little burned out on open world games right now. And so what I did do is I went through some of the comments on the blogs to see what people say about this game,
mm-hmm.
including like Metacritic and some of the gaming blogs and stuff like that.
Right.
And apparently the overwhelming feeling that I get is that apparently if you have played GTA 5, that's really too bad because it apparently ruins every other game that you'll play from now until until the sun runs out of hydrogen and destroys the earth. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Everybody's like, oh, this is just GTA 5, but it blows and they can S my D and all this. Like, like all this craziness. And so what is the deal? What is the connection? Ash, you played GTA 5. So
I played the ever living shit out of GTA 5. And I did a lot of the multiplayer too. And I'm going to be perfectly honest. It feels a lot like GTA 5. I mean, in terms of the mechanics and everything, there's a lot of the buttons that are the same.
Mm-hmm.
It moves the same. It feels the same. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But I totally understand now why they pushed this, because they were supposed to come out at the same time.
Yeah,
and would have been bad.
It would have been really bad. And to be honest, at this point, there's more to do in GTA 5. And I honestly feel like GTA 5 was a bit more of a polished game than this.
Well, it's also their fifth game, and they spent millions of dollars.
And Rockstar is like, they are known for this massive open world. You know,
I think it's an unfair comparison because I think, like you said, that's fifth. GTA. If this was Watch Dogs 7 or 3 or 4, I think we would see a much more polished version of Watch Dogs, just like you would of a GTA. Mm-hmm. Instead, this is a brand new IP on a brand new console. So I give them a tiny bit of leeway in that respect.
Yeah.
But I think that the way you interact with the world in this game is so much more unique. It's what's hooking me. Mm-hmm. So like GTA, I personally find boring. Like I play it and I'm like, cool, I'm a scumbag who, you know, needs to do whatever to get my money back. And then that's what every GTA feels like to me. I know it's way deeper. I know I'm selling it very short. Mm-hmm. But to me, they just never connect. And this game, you know, maybe be due to the technology aspect of it, I just feel like it's an interesting world when you walk around and like when you walk around with your phone out. So one of the mechanics is you walk around with your phone out and you can information hack all the people that you're walking around because everybody's connected to the CTOS. And then you'll get like as if you get to hackable people, you can hack them and you'll get little bonuses in game. Like you might hack their bank account and then you don't actually get the money right away. But what you do is you get the information to pull the money out of an ATM.
Mm-hmm. Which is cool.
Or you might unlock music for the car, or you can just like listen into conversations, which
you
will either
you steal like MP3s off their
phone. Yeah, you literally steal MP3s off their phone.
And then you can play them later, which I thought was really pretty and awesome mechanic. Yeah.
And then you can listen in on the conversations, which will do one of kind of two things. One, they're just entertaining and kind of funny. Like you're like getting these, it's like voyeuristic. You get these little chunks of people's life around the city. Mm-hmm. Or it sometimes will unlock side quests, like while you're hacking. So you'll hack somebody and they'll talk about like a crime they're going to commit. And then you have the option of going and preventing that crime from getting committed. And like that stuff is interesting and it's unique. And to me, it feels like a different perspective of this open world. You're not walking around with a bunch of faceless characters who happen to talk around you.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're actually interacting with them in a passive, but like I said, voyeuristic and weird way. Like it makes mm-hmm. you, it feels different than I think a lot of other games feel. And that's the winning mechanic, which gives you the other abilities. This hacking mechanic is the thing, you know, I mean, that's what the sales point of the game is. And it is good. Like honestly, driving, when you get used to driving your car, and you're trying to get away from people, and then you start hacking the city in the process, which, you know, you can. So, like, the basic one they showed off a bunch is, like, let's say you're driving and you're getting tailed. You can have the intersection light up all green right after you get through it, and then they'll get wrecked. And, the cars will have this huge pile-up wreck, and then you can take off and just get out of there, essentially. Or you can, like, raise, like, street blockers that are, like, down to, like, block off roads. And if you time it correctly, they'll just, like, jam into it and basically explode, like Ash said. And then you can just keep driving. And, like, that stuff is fun. It's interesting. Like, you can get into buildings and hack your way through systems. So you can, like, sort of old Shadowrun style hack into a computer system in a building, and that'll give you access to cameras, which will give you, like, there was one mission I did where I literally didn't move. I got to a point where I was hidden and I hacked a camera, and then you can hack other cameras from that camera. Like you can start just going through the system, and then you can hack like an actual computer system where you end up like inside the machine sort of connecting these nodes. And then when you connect the nodes, it'll unlock something and like maybe do like open doors or give you the information you were looking for, or, you know, it could be a myriad of things that could end up doing at the end of the day. But that the system is really interesting and fun. Like I really enjoyed it.
I kind of get the sense from what you say that sort of the presentation of this game is sort of what allows you to kind of like assume the role of the character, you know, like, so if you were to play if you've played a lot of, let's say you play a lot of first person shooters. And so by the time you play your 10th one, you're just like, what am I doing? Just give me my gun. Let's go shoot these guys. And I'm done with this, you know? And I think in the same way you could, if you play a lot of open world games, you could sit down with one of those games and just go like, all right, where's all the stuff I need to collect? Where are all the people I need to find? Like, I'm just going to do this laundry list and I'm done with it.
Right.
So it sounds like maybe what the appeal of this game is what it asks you to do as the player and the attitude that they want you to take when you go into the game.
Yeah. So, yes, absolutely. Okay. That's well put. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Everything works very well. I totally won't. But in terms of the overall presentation, like how the game looks and felt, like as I was driving around the city running away from cops, I'm like, oh, I've had the same car chase before, minus the hacking the city mechanic. I've done this in GTA 5. Like, I've had to run and hide in alleys and do all that stuff. So that's not all that new. Other
but isn't
than
GTA having... 5 supposed to have, like, an element of humor to it that I feel like is not in Watch Dogs?
I don't know if – I mean, 5 has a little bit of – I mean, I think the older GTAs were, like, almost comically violent and just kind of, like, ridiculous.
Oh, okay.
5 was actually a pretty serious game.
Oh, okay.
Some of the characters were, you know, kind of a little bit off the wall. But at the same time, they were kind of in more of a Tarantino ultra-violence, like, holy shit, I never want to actually meet this person kind of way, you know?
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And I'm sure the story in GTA 5 is way deeper, well, probably better written at the end of the day, or at least more immersively written, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Because the story in Watch Dogs is sort of surface level. You know, the niece part of it is intriguing and definitely a way to push you, but you never really met the niece in the first place. So it's not like you didn't have this, like, super tie to this girl. You just, you're told that she's your niece, you're told that you care, and then she's dead. And you're like, okay, like...
Let me ask you this. Why didn't they just make it his daughter? Because, you know, he's like, my niece! I mean, there's so many people, like... I mean, a lot of us, you know, like, we would care, but not quite as much as it was our own kid, you know?
Sure.
So why do you think they went with that?
I have a feeling that there's more in the story on the way down.
So he's the uncle and the father.
Right, no. No, I mean, because they
like
set him up.
Like Marinovich or something.
Because they kind of, I don't think he could be, part of the reason I think is that I think it would be weird if he was the dad. His daughter dies, his son's still alive, and his wife's still alive, and he just like fucking up and disappears because his daughter dies and stops. Like, he's kind of not in the family. So, like, I think his lifestyle would be difficult to lead and be a father at the same, you know what I mean? Because he's set up as this lone hacker guy. I don't think you could really do that as a father figure, I guess.
That's,
I don't know.
Maybe that was
I think that might be part of it. I just think that there could have been more lead into her death. I think that could have very easily been done. Maybe cut a few hours of poker out of the game and, you know, add some storytelling. But so that's like a joke, but I played poker for like literally an hour. I told you guys this already, but the mechanic of playing poker in the game actually works really well. And I just sat there playing poker, and then all of a sudden it was like 1 a.m. and I'm like, what am I doing? Like, why am I playing poker for an hour? And it's not even for like a lot of, it was like middle stakes poker. And so it was like for $1,000.
Yeah.
Which to me in real life is a lot of money. To Aiden Pierce, who's walking around with like $60,000 in his pocket, it's really not that big of a deal to lose $1,000. So, it was fun, but it was kind of pointless. The one other thing we've got to get to, though, before we move on from Watch Dogs is there's a whole system of challenges and sort of socialness to the game that integrates with other players in the game, as well as players with the CTOS app, which is what Scott played with.
I was going to ask you, have you encountered any other players from other games coming into your game to hack you?
Yes, and I accept it every time because it's fun.
So what, tell me how that works. What exactly happens?
You'll be playing, and you can be literally anywhere in the game, and all of a sudden you'll get this little notification in the right side of the screen that says, like, incoming... you know, a request for one-on-one hack session or eight versus, you know, multiplayer round or whatever. And there's a bunch of these little mini games that you can choose as a player to enter into, or that you can like accept when somebody else enters, and it's randomized, but you can also play with your friends, I believe. And basically there are these little mini games. One of them's like one-on-one hacking, where one guy will come in and try to hack you and then run and hide essentially. And you have to get to him and kill him before he finishes it.
Okay.
There's one where it's like a multiplayer essentially, where it's a capture the flag essentially. And the neat thing about it is that you enter it and you kind of like come out of your game. You're still in the same part of the city, or you're still in the city, but you'll come out of your game, enter into this multiplayer game, and it's kind of like no holds bars. Like, citizen kills don't count anymore, because you're running around and just like firing your machine gun at people.
Right.
So, like, citizen kills don't go against you, and it's just all about, like, winning this capture the flag match. And it went – the capture the flag one I did went for, like, probably 15 minutes. It was, like, a healthy multiplayer session. Really fun, like, challenging. And I tend to accept them just because it does add this, like, kind of random spark to what would otherwise be still a fun, you know, big open world game, but not – would lack maybe a little spark, and this does add a little bit of a spark to the game. It's interesting, and okay. like as long as you're not like in the middle of a story, it's fun to do. Like it's fun to jump out and play.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I've been using the CTOS app, which is at least available on Apple phones. I'm assuming Android as well.
Probably haven't checked.
What it is you actually don't even have to own Watch Dogs to use this app. Pretty much all you need to have is a Uplay account. So you sign in with Uplay. You can add friends from Uplay, from PSN, or from Xbox, as long as you know their username. And then when those people are playing Watch Dogs, you can open up your... I'm supposed to get push notifications, but I don't. But you can open up your app, and the app basically just shows you a kind of like a holographic map representation of the city. And so, for example, Matt was playing, and I could see where he was in the city, like where he was, I guess, driving around. And I would assume that if other people were playing simultaneously, I would see the locations of everybody in the city.
That's
and
awesome.
So what I can do is I can just go and I can tap on Matt's name, and it issues a challenge to Matt, I'm assuming.
Yeah, yeah, and, I can accept or decline.
Yeah, so I guess these challenges are randomized. I can create my own challenges, I suppose. But what it does is it engages the game player with the app player in sort of a it's almost like a contest of wills, because the player in the game, from what I gather, is supposed to drive around the city and collect these like nodes or these gems or something. What do they show up for you? Are they like glowing lights?
Yes, mine was like they're like flag points, essentially.
It's like a checkpoint race almost.
Checkpoints. Yeah, it was a checkpoint race, and you pinned me, which is how you won. But
yeah, so I mean, I played with you, and it was like a traditional checkpoint race through the city, and I played with somebody else, and it was a checkpoint race, but there was not a predetermined path. It was kind of like the checkpoints were spread out all over the place, and you could kind of like just go around to get them. And what's really fun is that as the app player, you control the CTOS, which is awesome. So it gives you the map. It gives you where the player is. And it basically tells you, hey, go stop the player. So they give you a helicopter, and you can control the helicopter. And you're supposed to get the helicopter first to where the player is in the city. And then once you get the helicopter sort of hovering over the player, it shines a spotlight on the car, and it starts to build up heat. And as the heat builds up, you get points within the CTOS app, and then you use those points to dispatch. You can dispatch cop cars, SWAT SUVs, people with machine guns. If your helicopter pilot gets close enough to the car and they maintain a lock for long enough, there's a sniper in the helicopter that will start to shoot at the car. You can also control all of the crazy shit in the city. So as you see the player driving around the city, you can actually queue up the traffic lights. You can queue up the barricades, you know, all the crazy shit that happens. You can close garage doors so they can't escape into the garages. And you basically unleash hell onto the player while they are trying to complete the objectives. So how was that for you?
Yeah. It was really fun. You just beat me really quickly. Like, we got to this point, we were doing a checkpoint race, and, you know, I'm hauling ass. I think you had already sent cops after me, and I was, like, ahead of them.
Yeah.
And then you initiated the barricades behind me, and I was like, ha-ha! And then you initiated the ones in front of me, and I hit the ones in front of me, and I was like, damn it! And then I tried to back up, and I hit the ones behind me, and then I was like, and there was, a raised wall on either side. I couldn't get out in the car, and I was just like, damn it. And I think I had, like, 13 seconds, so I couldn't, like, run to another car or anything, and I ended up losing.
I played a prolonged match with somebody once who apparently the car was destroyed, but they were able to get out of the car and into a second car. And
which is the interesting thing. It's not like you're not locked down in the world at all while you're playing these like missions or races. Like, you can get out of your car and just like open fire and jump into another car and take off again. And like, that's totally okay in the game. They don't care.
And the one thing that's really sad about this app is that it's so much fun, and it sounds like you have fun with it, but that sort of internet game player mentality, I probably tried 5 matches after I played against you, and every single person like sees the helicopter, they see 2 cop cars, and then they quit instantly. They go, challenge canceled. And then the app gives you no credit for the player quitting out.
That's crappy.
So you don't get any, like, because when you, the app player can build up XP, and then you can use the XP to upgrade your things that you can attack with, essentially.
Oh, cool.
So,
I mean, I definitely had fun.
Yeah, but I'm having people quit out, and so nothing happens. It's like a wasted effort. So
yeah, that sucks.
I would like for them, the app developers, to at least grant some sort of like consolation credit to the app player when the game player quits, because that's like almost unfair. You could get all the way to the end and almost win and then quit and then nobody gets anything, which is really shitty. So
yeah,
that's the one minor thing. But if you have friends that are playing the game, use the app because it's fucking cool.
I would say my sort of closing thoughts on it are, you know, at least this far into the game, are that most if not all of my fears for them delaying it this far have been squashed. I really am enjoying it. I'm having a lot of fun playing. I played literally like marathon sessions this weekend.
Awesome.
Granted, I did not play Grand Theft Auto 5 for reasons like I stated. I just never clicked
not,
with me.
Not your thing.
So maybe I'm not burned out on open world, and maybe other people are just getting a little fatigued. But if you haven't done anything open world recently, or if you, you know, are looking for something fun, I really am enjoying this game. I think a lot of the fears of it getting delayed, and also when you read the bad reviews, see if it was PC or not, because apparently the PC game had like network problems out the ass, and the network is half the game.
Like I think the PC version runs on like Uplay in the back end, even if it's on Steam. And I think the first day Uplay was just like totally jacked up, which is why it worked on the other two platforms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like mind the reviews if you're reading good or bad ones. I don't think any of them have been like glowing, like amazing reviews, but it is a good game, and it's, I think it's definitely worth the money. And it's huge. The game is gigantic. I can't imagine how long, if you wanted to 100% it, how much actual gameplay time that would be.
Yeah, it is. It is crazy. A monstrosity.
But we'll talk more. We can do like more once Ash and maybe Scott get further into the game, or we finish it. We can do some spoilery talk. But I really do enjoy it. And for, you know, all the jokes we leveled at them through some of the packs aside, I'm willing to, you know, eat my hat on this one or whatever and say that I'm actually really loving it. So
cool.
I really like Watch Dogs. Yeah.
All right. So the last thing that I wanted to talk about was I was invited to check out a game called Teleglitch, which I think has actually been out for a while, at least a year or so. But they recently released a sort of like an editor's cut expanded edition, which they call Teleglitch Die More Edition. So with a name like that, I kind of knew what I was getting into, something that was extremely difficult and taxing. But I did not realize exactly what this game was, and I'm glad that I took the time to check it out. So Teleglitch is sort of a 8-bit styled top-down roguelike action game, almost like a survival horror kind of game that has a sci-fi element. Like you're in some kind of like weird, I think you're on like a planet in like a space station, and everything is all jacked up, and it's not like spooky looking the way that Dead Space is. It's scary by proxy of being incredibly difficult, if that makes sense. So what you immediately realize or notice about the game is that when you launch it, of course, it's got that retro 8-bit style, but it literally launches in a window that's like 640 by 480 on your computer screen, as if you're running an old PC game off like a, you know, 5.25 or whatever.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. It's pretty hilarious. And the you have an inventory system of about 20 items, I think, that you can carry at a time. Mm. And it's literally just a list of text on the left side of your screen that you have to scroll through with your scroll wheel on your mouse.
Okay.
So that's how you manage your inventory, is just like a text list on the side of the screen. You know, same 8-bit text at the bottom to give you your health and your ammo and what's going on. And you can interact with objects and they kind of reveal parts of the story to you. And then it's got like a really interesting crafting system in sort of the theme of other survival horror games. You collect weapons and you collect ammo, and then ammo is scarce. And then you get things, you know, you'll get things like explosives, but you don't want to use the explosives all the time because you need to sort of manage when you kill somebody with your knife versus when you shoot somebody with your gun versus throwing a grenade at them or whatever. And, I just played through the first level and I thought it was awesome. I was really surprised at what this game was, because when you look at the screenshots, you think like, oh, this is unmanageable. Like whatever is going on here, whatever is happening with this inventory system and all this text on the screen, I have no fucking clue. But it's really not that difficult. Really, it's just inventory on the left side, status at the bottom. And then you just run around on this procedurally generated map trying to fight your way out to reach the teleporter that takes you to the next part of the game, I guess. And okay. From what I understand and from what I've read of the reviews, actually, even if you look at the Steam tags, like the Steam tags are roguelike, indie, and procedural Death Labyrinth.
Oh boy.
So those are the top three tags. But the game is really cool the way that it kind of does some cool things with the visual effects. So when you're moving through an environment, you kind of see only what the character can see from their own perspective. And it kind of does this really neat thing with shadows and lighting and revealing parts of the map to you as you almost like a flashlight or a funnel. So if you're walking through a doorway, if you're far away from the door, you can only see, you know, through the cone mm-hmm. of your actual vision. And then as you walk through the door, the cone opens up and you see more of the room. And I don't know. It's just a really interesting presentation. It's got this weird like 8-bit art style, retro, like as if you bought the game, you know, in an old crumpled up box and you just kind of cleaned it off and you're like, oh, let me see if this still runs on my modern PC. Like that's kind of what the game is like with modern, you know, effects and technology. So
cool.
Teleglitch is available on Steam. I think it's $12.99 for the expanded edition. And then they also have a DLC pack for $1.99, which is called Guns and Tunes, which is funny because there's no music in the game. So I think it just unlocks some additional guns and gives you a soundtrack to listen to, like, on your own time, I guess. but I would encourage people to check it out because I found this really surprising. And I think a lot of people, I guess if you're in the know, you already know. But I found this game to be a lot of fun, and I will continue playing it.
Cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome, man.
So we teased Wolf Among Us. We'll probably talk. We're going like tiny bit longish, yeah. But we'll talk about Wolf Among Us next week. I've played through chapters 2 and 3, and I've got chapter 4 left, which leads only to the last chapter, which is not out yet. So it's good. How's that? We'll talk about it more in depth
next week. I'll try and catch up next week so we can talk about it.
Indeed.
Yes.
Both those games apparently are coming to next gen consoles, Wolf Among Us and.
Saw that.
The Walking Dead later this year. Leaks. Internet leaks, you guys.
Mm-hmm. Sweet. Let's talk about more leaks in a minute.
Yeah.
All right, guys, so as we wrap up this week's podcast, this will probably come out on Wednesday or so, but then that leaves us just a few days away until E3 comes up, so that'll probably be the next thing that we talk about. So I thought we could spend a few moments sort of waxing about what could happen, what you would like to see. I've kind of been sitting on this joke for a while where, you know, the thing that I'm looking forward to the most are the games that are going to get delayed until 2016. Yeah, so that it wasn't, I guess I didn't land very well, did it? Hey, jokes.
Hi-o.
Leaving I was trying to think of other names for E3, like everybody exaggerates excellence or something yeah. along those lines.
There you go. See, the jokes will come to us as we get ramped up. But anyways, okay. So I think that we'll start with, maybe we'll talk a little bit about the Xbox, cause that's the thing that I think we're all closest to.
Okay.
And I think maybe the thing, obviously, after last year, they're going to talk a lot about games. I think that's a safe assumption.
They're not releasing a console every year now?
No, and I don't think they're not going to talk a lot about TV, if you will.
Yeah.
They probably won't even say the word this time.
Yeah, it's going to be.
Do you think they'll talk about NFL a little bit?
Yeah, I mean,
maybe.
They're working on some game shows, like game based television shows. Aren't they doing like Halo series? Yeah. And I think they'll also, you know, they're supposed to be 2 free games on Xbox One this month with Games with Gold. And they're also moving to a subscription-based model for that. So similarly to the way that PlayStation Plus works, you will only have on Xbox One, you will only have access to the free games as long as you're a subscriber. And this month's free games are going to be Max and the Curse of Brotherhood and Halo Spartan Assault. And Spartan Assault is pretty cool. It's a twin stick shooter and it's multiplayer, so we should play it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's going to be a lot of focus on games because, I mean, even if you go back and look, just within this last month, there have been a few games that have come out, but there's really been nothing. And a lot of the things that have come out so far have been games that are also available on the previous generation systems, right? Including Watch Dogs, including Wolfenstein, right, as well.
Yeah.
It's also
yeah.
So I think Titanfall, right? And then there were a couple platform exclusives for PlayStation 4, like Infamous and was that Killzone, the new one that came out with
Shadow
the launch?
Fall.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think honestly, like this year we are gonna for the first time see some really gorgeous next gen only or current gen only stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about that. Did you want to specifically talk about Microsoft stuff? Because, I mean, I don't know.
No,
if
we can talk about other stuff. It was just a good place for me to start because that's what I'm most familiar with.
So, I mean, I think if we see anything specific to Microsoft and next gen, we might see a teaser for the Black Tusk Gears of War that they're developing. So if we see anything specific to Microsoft, we're probably going to see that.
I mean, they just decoupled their Kinect. I mean, that'll be coming out like right after the probably actually on the day of the
it is the day of. Yeah, it's the 9th. So as soon as they have their press conference, I mean, that same day they're going to be available for the $399 Kinect-less version. So
both consoles are now essentially going to be exactly positioned in the same place on June 9th. So I feel like the race is on at this point to do something. Get games out to the people that own these consoles already, you know?
Absolutely.
Do you not? So I have a friend who has a PS4. I have a friend in quotes. No, but he has a PS4 and he was complaining to me. He feels like there's no games out for it. And I was like, I was like, well, I feel like there's stuff out for the Xbox. But then I realized it's mostly just been Titanfall, you know, with the exception of Wolfenstein was very good.
Yeah.
And Watch Dogs has been very good. But those are out for PS as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, you know, Titanfall really filled that void. But it really was that kind of like huge title to come out on the Xbox.
For sure.
Yeah.
But I hate that. I kind of hate that they're the same system now. Like, I'm bummed about it so much because now I feel like it is all in the games and exclusives now versus system. And I don't know. I'm bummed. Anyways, keep going.
Well, how about Sony? I mean, Sony's got, you know, do you think they'll talk a little bit more about that headset that they're working on?
Oh, the VR
Project
stuff?
Project Morpheus.
I think that's a little ways down the road. I think we may get a glimpse of that at their press conference, but I don't know if they're going to devote a lot of time to that. I think if they were smart, they'd probably do what Matt was saying and kind of show off some original IPs that people are kind of clamoring for. So we'll probably see a little bit of Uncharted in there. You know, some of their go-to titles are what people are really waiting for.
Is there another Uncharted in the works?
Yeah, there is. There is.
Ah.
So
and what does Sony do this year? Because they spent pretty much all of the last E3 trying to tell you why. You know, they were like, we're aligned with the gamers and we're better than that other company that just had their thing a few minutes ago. Don't worry about them. You know, but now that argument is not as strong an argument to make this time around.
Yeah.
So I feel like sort of the onus is on both companies to show something now. Like, this is instead of saying this is why you need to buy this console over that one, they need to be telling people this is why you need to buy this console, period. You know?
Yeah.
Because
I think that is in the software. I mean, that's going to be like, hey, like this is it. And I think like one of the things that Microsoft will do is, you know, Sunset Overdrive is an exclusive and it's getting close to being finished. So I think they're going to probably show off Sunset Overdrive in its entirety, and like show how gorgeous the game looks and actually show people playing it and be like, hey, you can only play this on Xbox. And they'll probably do that with a handful of titles as well.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, there's a lot of. In terms of just software that's going to be on both systems, there's a lot of rumor and speculation that we will see another Fallout announced because that is definitely in the works and it's going to take place, I want to say, in Boston this time.
Oh, wow.
So a current-gen Fallout would be pretty awesome to see.
That would be cool, yeah.
Yeah, and then new Star Wars stuff we're supposed to be seeing. Supposedly Visceral's working on a Star Wars game. Which is kind of fucking crazy.
Can they just make a Star Wars themed Dead Space game? Because I would be okay with that.
Yeah, I think I'm.
You know, there was a couple of novels that somebody wrote about like this like viral infestation. It was called like Death Troopers or something like that. So definitely, it's within the wheelhouse of Star Wars to do something like that. Even though those books don't count anymore, you guys, none of that stuff counts. But still, it's possible.
Yeah.
What do you think about there was that rumor that came up a month or two ago that Nintendo was working on new hardware and maybe something that was more on par with the current generation systems and would kind of like still be backwards compatible with Wii U games, but then also sort of moving things forward into the future with this idea of connecting a handheld to a console and having a more powerful console to compete with the other systems. What do you think about that?
I feel like that would be an absolute disaster for Nintendo.
Do you think that would just be total madness?
I mean, even though the Wii U is not, you know, a Wii-like success story, I think them backing out of that system and putting another, like, more powerful version out, unless they sell it as just, like, the next version of the Wii U and they update the guts, but even then they have to raise the price. They're going to have to figure out how to fight Xbox and PlayStation on price at that point. Like, it seems like a nightmare. I feel like they just need to keep their head down. Just keep trying to pump out Mario games and figure out if that'll save the system at this point.
You know, I just really read something.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I read something this afternoon. Mario Kart 8 went on sale last week. And
I've heard it's amazing. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, the sales figures came out for the Wii U, and it shot up over 600% due to Mario Kart coming out. So, I mean, honestly, they'll sell systems. They just need to fucking make some games. Yeah. I mean, honestly, make a Zelda, make a Metroid, make a new really good Dr. Mario. Like, just go back to your catalog, make new versions of those games, and you will sell consoles.
Yeah, that's the point I was going to make. Is
make a new Donkey Kong Country.
Yes, oh, God, that anything. Would be so good. Fuck's sake, Kid Icarus, whatever.
You know, like, what's crazy about this whole thing is that I think if you were to take sort of every game developer at face value, and you were to, like, look at their average critic, what, you know, pick your favorite site, but whatever their average critic score is across, like, their entire catalog, I feel like Nintendo would be at the top of that list as far as, like,
it'd probably do pretty well, yeah, as far as, like, original IP goes.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, if you were just to take every developer and you took an average of like their score for every game that they've made, right? Like, mm-hmm. So you line up, like, Nintendo against a company like Valve and against like a developer like Visceral, and then like a company
Valve
like BioWare.
Might be close there.
But then
Valve,
I'm saying, like, you would have, like, Nintendo would be sort of on that same level with your BioWares and your Valves.
Yeah.
But, you know, here we are looking at Nintendo, and they're the ones having trouble selling hardware, which is crazy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, it's like Ash just exclaimed. They need to put out a game or two or seven that are, like,
but, I mean, so do the other IP. Ones now, too. Like,
sure.
Sony and Xbox are in the exact same place. There's there
sure,
needs
but you,
to be games.
You can't tell me that if Nintendo turns around and says, oh, well, here's our $400 Wii U, and this one's got better guts in it, that who's going to buy that right now?
Yeah.
And
also,
I mean,
honestly, there's nothing that's going to sell that system at this moment.
And the big thing you guys have to remember is third party can't develop for Nintendo right now.
Right.
It's too expensive. So you'll never see, you know, Watch Dogs. You'll never see the new Fallout. You never see any of those games on the Wii U because it can't run on the Wii U. So,
and you know what? Watch Dogs would probably be awesome with that game.
Amazing. Back. Yeah.
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 I mean, that's the thing. It's like they didn't put out a piece of junk peripheral, if you will.
Yeah.
That thing looks cool. And I said it when it came out. I was like, you could do a lot of neat stuff with that.
Yeah, but I played that Zombie U at PAX, and that was really awesome.
Yeah, but you can't put that out on a half-par system and then put no original IP games on it that people want.
Yeah.
And I think, like Ash said, that the fact that sales went up when a really awesome Mario Kart comes out just proves that, like, hey, just put out some freaking games.
Yeah, you got Smash Bros. Smash Bros. Right around the corner, man.
Mm-hmm.
It'll probably drive sales up again. And
yeah,
they're selling an adapter to hook up GameCube control, or not game. Yeah, GameCube, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I saw that, I was like, okay, they get it now. They're starting to understand. Like, the fighting community wants this game. They could get a lot of traction on Twitch, you know, or maybe they'll probably control that themselves. But you know what I mean? Like, give it to the people that want it. Like, that competitive fighting community wants that game, so let them have it.
I don't buy into the fact that they need a big, powerful system. I look at things like iPad and, you know, even iPhones or Android, like Ouya sold like shit, but you know what I mean? Something like Amazon TV kind of thing. Like, you can put out a low-power system and sell well if you put the right things on it. And, like, I feel like Nintendo's positioned to do it. They just need to do it. Like, they need to, like, get off this, like, high horse of not releasing a Zelda game in 10 years or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they've got to figure that stuff out. But I think if they release a game now, it's that's going to be
like a system, like new hardware.
Yeah,
total
I think
madness.
Or not game. Sorry, new system.
Yeah, I mean they're doing they're not even going to be physical presence. They're doing a digital kind of press conference.
Yeah.
So there you go. Any other thoughts before we wrap it up? Anything you're
no?
Looking
I mean at? Next week we'll have a whole lot to talk about. It's going to be jam packed E3 excitement.
Yeah.
So
get fired
yeah,
up.
Yeah, I hope there's a bunch of new games coming, because it'd be cool. It'd be nice to have some new stuff to salivate over.
You're gonna get some remakes like Last of Us and Metro and.
Oh, isn't there? Isn't Bethesda putting something out?
I mean,
the Battle Cry, that alternate history.
Oh, that was kind of like half leaked, wasn't it? Something like that.
Yeah. I think that's getting announced too. It's like an alternate Civil War history. Is that right? No,
like that's the one that's supposed to be all like melee combat or something, right?
Yeah.
Crazy. Well, right. Shit. Well, thank you guys for tuning in to episode 155 of the Rated NA podcast. As always, you can find us on the old Twitter, and it's @NerdAppropriate. You can email us directly, and that is Matt, Ash, Scott, and Hillary with one L @NerdAppropriate.com. And you can find us on Facebook, and that's /NerdAppropriate. And we'll be back next week with some E3 madness.
Yay.
See you guys.
Have a good week.
Have been fun.
Bye-bye. You guys ready?
Yes, sir.
Let's do it.
Oh, you're recording, right?
Yes. So, yeah.
Sweet.
So you're good to go.
Yeah.